Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening to all of our listeners on the Wise Women Media Radio Show. We have a special guest tonight, but first I want to tell you about our show, where you can find us on the internet at wisewomenmedia.posteris.com. And I want to give some kudos out to our sponsors, which are Roundtree 7, Here Be Monsters, Daughters of Isis, Hoodooed, Power New Media and Public Relations, Tarot and Stars, Florida Nature Photos. And also, if you head over to wisewomenmedia.posteris.com, hit us up at the WePay link and help fund us so we can stay on the air and come, you know, broadcast every week as we have been trying to do. But the unfortunately, these things cost money, and we need to keep the internet on, and every little bit helps, so dig deep. I wanted to also mention one of my new favorite bands, which opened the show, Alabama Shakes, and that was Brittany Howard, the lead singer, lead guitarist, and songwriter, doing Hold On. And that was a live performance from Sydney, Australia, just this past week. So we do have a lot of things to talk about. One of the things, of course, was the move to amend that came through town. Move to amend, which is a huge movement to adopt a 28th Amendment to the Constitution to abolish Citizens United, overturn corporate personhood, and of course, part of that is that, you know, free speech should not be bought with money. Money should be taken out of elections. And Citizens United is just bad. It means the corporations have control and they do rule us. So if you want to see more about Move to Amend, you can hit up movetoamend.org, the website, and sign the petition there. Or you can go to Move to Amend Tampa Bay or Move to Amend Florida if you're in Florida on Facebook. Both of those are on Facebook. Hit those up, like the pages, and get more information. So let me introduce to you our guest. We're going to be probably in a conversation about a lot of the environmental things that are happening now. Two of those things, of course, are the Gulf oil spill. There's a lot of news coming out of the Gulf region about that this week, and the pipeline. And I also wanted to mention, which I'll do later in the show, about the TPP. But, Teresa, are you with me on the line?
Hi, Anita. Yeah, I'm here.
So, Teresa, tell us a little bit about yourself and where you're calling from and exactly what the points that you want to cover. Kind of give us a summary, and then we can get more in detail with questions.
Sure thing, Anita. My name's Teresa Graff. I'm from Mobile, Alabama. I'm a native here. I've lived here all my life except for 2 years. I'll never forget April 20th, 2010, when we heard the news that the Macondo well had blown. And that's why I'm calling this evening. That will be the focus, although I wanted to applaud you on the move to amend and encourage everybody and anybody, go to their website, start your own movement locally. We are never going to get out from under the pressures we're under as long as corporations are considered people. Thank you so much, Anita, for pushing that agenda. I stand behind you 100%. That's basically me, who I am. Environmental issues are huge. I have grandchildren. I'm borrowing this planet from them. I don't own anything. And that's why I take the stands that I do.
So tell us about some of the biggest news stories that are coming out of the Gulf region in regards to BP. And there's a lawsuit and a day in court, finally. And
absolutely,
tell us a little bit about that. And then we really need to get into detail about how many people in the Gulf region are sick and just what the human impact is, because nobody seems to want to, none of the mainstream media seems to want to cover that at all. So, you know, we have a lot to talk about. and this show can be 2 hours if we want it to be. If we don't, we can shut it down at 1 hour. So we can talk as long as you want to talk. So,
okay.
I'm going to turn it over to you.
Well, thank you. The point that we're working on right now, this week, Monday, BP goes to trial. And we have been pushing, we've been on a hard push for full disclosure, a full trial, no settlement, and we want to have citizen involvement. We want to know what caused the problems. We want the bans to be lifted from information sharing about the dolphin deaths and the endocrine disruptions that have been caused by the VOCs from the crude oil and the dispersants. We have major problems with endocrine disruption in the Gulf. When you talk about sick people here, we're looking at problems that will continue on forward for our children's children's children. Endocrine disruptor, if you need a good view, the best thing I can tell you is to look at what happened in Japan after after we released the nuclear bomb there. Basically, the VOCs have the same effect on the endocrine system as nuclear fallout would. They affect everything, and it is horrendous. If you give me just a minute here, I'll pull up some information on exactly what so that I can be more clear. But the endocrine disruption is huge. The problem that we're having right now, and honestly, is that BP has paid a tremendous amount of money to keep this out of the courts. They would rather settle. They have a major deal going on in Russia right now just to cover their court costs. They're selling off their assets in order to cover this, and they don't want full disclosure. They don't ever want everything coming out. They've got things sewn up to the point, Anita. Any tests that are done, any scientific monitoring, anything like that is it's got a gag order for 3 years once the testing's finished. That means that the testing will never get finished. They'll continue to run these tests forever, and we'll never really know unless we get a full disclosure settlement, unless it is decreed in court that they have to give us a full disclosure.
Tell us a little bit about how this is related to the pipeline, because a lot of the activists are now also working on that issue, traveling and going to the direct action. So this is all one big, it's become like all one big picture of the plans that the corporations have for this part of the United States. And there's nothing slowing them down. They're just doing all of this with impunity. And they're using eminent domain to snatch up people's property. So tell us a little bit about that, too.
Well, you've hit something that's very near and dear to my heart on that one. The pipeline is going to go from Canada, but it will ultimately end up, again, in my backyard. And it just breaks my heart, excuse me. But tar sands is what is going to be flowing through that pipeline in particular. And for those that aren't familiar with tar sands, it is the dirtiest form of energy that you can possibly imagine. It is, without a doubt, the most harmful thing that we could possibly send in a pipeline that big, that long, with that bad a history of maintenance and problems. It will end up going through Mobile Bay. It's headed this way. I was shocked when I found out, to be honest. I didn't know. And when I found out, I just wanted to cry. We've got to do something. We've got to stop these folks. It can't keep going. It just can't. If we care about our children at all, we can't allow this to keep going.
I've been looking at a lot of the information that Deep Green Resistance has been putting out, and that particular group, they're of a firm belief that, it's going to take people losing their lives, being, mass incarcerated, massively incarcerated, and people dying on the line, on the front lines, basically, between them and the bulldozers. And this is, you know, it's come to this because we're not going to have any land left. It's going to be completely, we're going to be on a dying planet. And that's pretty much where we're at right now. I was just watching some reports about the purposeful, I don't know how true this is, and some would call it a conspiracy theory, but they're saying that purposely ice is being melted through different rays that are coming down from satellites and other weaponry, and that these ice fields and glaciers are purposely being melted so the land underneath can be drilled for oil. And I thought, this is just, you know, this is the time. We're way past the time of finding alternatives at this point. We have alternatives, but they're not being used in America, and they are being used in other countries successfully, but only for those that can afford them. So what do you say about solar, for instance, or wind?
I have actually, I was challenged. I have some friends who, at first, they didn't believe anything I had to say. And, you know, very big skeptics. And so I was challenged to look at so many areas. There is a magnificent technology that they've developed in China that they actually harness the power, the movement of the tides underneath the ocean. They have these huge barrels set up, and they capture the energy from the ocean itself. It's self-sustaining. It's a fabulous form of energy, and I think that we have to look at everything at this point because it's obvious that we cannot keep going like we're going. It's ridiculous. It's crazy.
I also watched a report just tonight on NBC. I can't remember the name of the show, but they were talking to quite a few men that had been stationed and had lived on Camp Lejeune, and it's to the point where, you know, you don't know if the toxins are in your groundwater, but the groundwater under Camp Lejeune was so polluted that a good majority of these men that were stationed there had all developed breast cancer, you know, while they were young men. And, of course, other diseases, too, and family members had died. Like, one man in particular had lost a child to leukemia. And when they go and study Camp Lejeune and the people that have lived there, there's a huge cluster of diseases and conditions. And they're starting to say that, you know, that water was contaminated for years and years, and there's no telling how many people have been sick and have died from it. But this is what we're up against. We're up against the corporations having total control and our government allowing it, and they act with impunity as if they are the law. For instance, even BP, to the point of using our own military as their security. So, you know, and as a veteran myself, I have a real issue with that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and they've used our Coast Guard to perpetuate their lies. It's astounding that more people aren't aware. I don't understand, and I get told, what I hear all the time is there's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah, and I'm sure a lot of, yeah, exactly like you said, a lot of people feel like there's no hope. They're hopeless. They have done everything that they can do. You know, if they've participated in direct actions, you know, which haven't accomplished anything, now what do we do? You know, what if we've been to all the protests, if we've written to our congressmen, if we've gotten them on the phone, if we've gone to their offices, if we've written to these corporations and asked them to stop, which they're not going to stop because the bottom line is money, you know, where do we go from here? That's why I believe that Move to Amend is so critical. But is that alone going to fix these problems? And
no, I really don't think that any one thing is going to fix the problems. I think that it's going to be a concerted effort of doing a little bit everywhere. Obviously, if you're cleaning your own home, you don't wash the dishes and consider your home clean. But in the same vein, we can't just look at one problem and expect it all to go away. This is our planet. We've got to live here. Our children have got to live here after we're gone. And we can't just do one thing and walk away. I've become so aware, as time goes on just what you really have to, you have to care. You have to get involved. You have to. If you have children, if you have grandchildren, if you have children you care about, you have to get involved. We can't stand idly by any longer. We're dealing with finite resources for one thing. There's only so much water. If we're talking about a fracking issue, which people may not know what that is, but that is when these gas companies come in and they literally fracture the shale rock bed to get the gases out that are trapped underneath. We have methane coming up in people's water and catching on fire as it's released into the oxygen. And people are sick. Talk about contaminated groundwater. Talk about, you know, oh, my God, they're so sick. They're dying. It reminds me of the movie The Pelican Brief. And, yes, people scream conspiracy theory, but they're facts. They're absolutely unrefutable facts. You can research them, and you will find out there's no conspiracy theory to it. These are facts. And people are dying. We have Bayou Corn. Methane was stored in a salt dome there, and they drilled too deep. And they now have the problem of this giant sinkhole and methane coming up. It's got seismic activity under it because, just as in the case of the Macondo well, they were foolish enough to drill on a tectonic plate.
And as Teresa mentioned, this Bayou Corn, it's a huge sinkhole that actually it was a salt dome which was used for the petrochemical industry, and it's a way that these petrochemicals can be stored underground. It's usually done in a very, very rural area, and it just so happens that this one has, would you call it like a cave-in? It's more like a cave-in, isn't it, of this?
Well, it's not just one cave-in, it's several cave-ins. There's one large cave-in, and what a lot of people may not understand, because they may not live on the coast or they may not be familiar with the drilling industry. When they're looking for oil, oil almost always rises up alongside a salt dome. They look for these salt domes and pockets of oil and pockets of gas. But the salt is a natural preservative. They can store things there, and they don't have to worry about certain things. But when they drilled at Bayou Corn, they drilled too deep. And now we have ocean water that has come in, and it is coming from the Gulf, actually, and it is eroding the salt dome. So if you can imagine this huge mountain of salt that has water swirling around it, and as the water's swirling, it's eroding that salt, and it's falling. And like Anita said, it's almost like a cave-in, because as the salt falls, seawater rushes in along with methane and crude. Heavy crude that is surrounding this salt dome. And the really amazing thing about Bayou Corn is that it follows the New Madrid.
Right, and we have other issues with the New Madrid Fault, which is it's just a very unstable part of the United States that runs along the Mississippi. And there's been seismic activity there throughout that whole area for years. But the big issue is the biggest 8-point whatever earthquakes happened, I believe, in 1803 from my research, and literally shook, and there were aftershocks for months and months and months afterwards, and it literally changed some of the geography of that place, and that would be almost geographically in the center of the United States along the Mississippi, and I think that borders on, what, Kentucky, Indiana. There's other states involved, but in any case, if anybody listening wants to find out more about Bayou Corn, you can do a Google search on Bayou, B-A-Y-O-U, and then Corn, C-O-R-N-E, and the Facebook page is Bayou Corn Sinkhole, all one word, on Facebook, and there's almost 2,000 people on that page, but any new information is normally posted there, so you can like the page and be notified of different updates, videos of what's going on. The people that live near Bayou Corn are seeing bubbling in the water.
I don't know if you saw it, Anita, but that entire subdivision has now been evacuated. They are gone. They're gone.
They weren't given a forced evacuation in the very beginning. They were given an option, and some of them stayed, so they're all gone now. But
as the sinkhole has grown in size, they've kept a seismic monitor going, and they decided that the one that they had was not strong enough. They called in a heavy equipment company, and please forgive me, I don't have all this information readily at hand. They called in a heavy equipment company. They came in and tried to put pads down. The pads sunk into Bayou Corn. They finally did establish a seismic monitoring system, and because we live here, because we're in grave danger, there is a group of us that has kept our own watch on the seismic activity, which is unbelievable right now. It's unbelievable. The big fear in this, and I don't want to be a fear monger, but I really feel like people have the right to know, and this is why people need to get involved and find out what's going on. If you look at the overhead shots of Bayou Corn, and you do and you pull way back, if you go on Google Earth, you will see that not very far, and I can't tell you exactly because, like I said, I don't have my notes in front of me, there is a nuclear power plant not too far from Bayou Corn. If you follow the New Madrid up, there are 26 nuclear reactors that follow the New Madrid. Why they placed them along a fault line is beyond me. But we are looking at a cataclysmic, earth-changing event if anything happens in Bayou Corn.
So if this blows, and there's already been methane and other gases released, such as benzene and things like that, if there's an explosion, this is definitely, to use the expression, this is going to rock our world. This is definitely
well,
going to rock.
Well, now, one thing I will give them props for, they have had steady burning methane, almost like a lamp, going, trying to burn some of this methane off. You also have hydrochloric acid, which is I don't have my notes in front of me. It's a gas, and it's a very heavy gas, and it does not rise like methane does, and so it doesn't dissipate, and I cannot call the name of it right now. I'm so sorry. I apologize.
So these people have actually evacuated. They have lost, I mean, basically they can't go back to their homes, so they have lost all rights to their property. I mean, it's not that they can't. If they can't go back, they've lost their property. It's literally been
the company. Well, here's the thing that I'm really upset about. The company Texas Brine that is responsible for this particular well site has not offered to buy their property from them. They are in a kind of a economic and sociological impacted environment because they can't go to their homes because they've been mandatorily evacuated. They cannot sell their home because obviously no one's going to buy it, and the company responsible will not buy their homes or have not bought their homes at this point in time. They're stuck. They're in limbo.
Wow.
It's the most grossly unfair thing that I can think of.
Now, several months ago, I did have Dr. Wilma Subra on, who has done a lot in the Gulf region with, documenting the human impact of what's happened with people since the Gulf oil spill. And she also was very well informed about what was going on with Bayou Corn and the people that live close to there. So what you're giving us now is pretty much updated information, because when I spoke with Dr. Wilma, the people had an evacuation, but it was not a mandatory one. So some of them were still continuing to live there. Tell me how the salt water is getting in that area. How far is Bayou Corn from the actual Gulf of Mexico? And is this part of what they call salt water immersion? Is that how the salt water is coming in? Because from what I understand, there's quite a distance between the bayou and the Gulf of Mexico. But maybe you can tell us a little more about that.
Well, Anita, that I don't know. I've looked at the charts. I've looked at the water flow that comes from the Gulf of Mexico, and it comes underground. I don't know if that's what you're talking about or not.
That would be the saltwater immersion, when it actually comes into water sources that are on mainland. And we have that here. We have that here in Tampa, too. So it's a massive amount of energy, massive amounts of energy to keep pumps going and to keep our water fresh and pure. In fact, Tampa right now, so they tell us, but because of a power outage at one of these plants, Tampa is now on a 48-hour boil water notice. As of this afternoon, 48 hours. So for pretty much 10 people are in city are going to be boiling their water. So that's some serious stuff there, you know.
Well,
and we only know what they tell us. We don't even know if that's true, you know. So
Exactly. And so much of this research, honestly, I've got to give some respect to the group Coastal Warriors. If anybody's on Facebook, I encourage them to join Coastal Warriors. You can find out so much information about all kinds of environmental impact. It doesn't matter where it is. But they started out as a homegrown indigenous population in Louisiana that was comprised of Native Americans that lived there in the small fishing communities, and they would not accept the lies. They did their own investigations. They dug. They found out. We did fact-checking. We, in the early days, when nobody knew what was going on and when we were being fed lies and lies and cover-ups and just, you know, the flow rate was lied about from the spill, the damage, there's so much information in my head I can't get it out. But these people, they went on a fact-checking mission, and they have been so thorough and so on top of things. And if it weren't for them, I honestly can say I wouldn't know what I know. And they have got so much respect from me. Sherry Boitland, Michelle Roberg, these people are warriors first class.
Well, we're talking about there's a Facebook group called the Real Coastal Warriors. That's the one you're referring to, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, because I'm on that, and I've been on that since the beginning. And at one point they had the Coastal Warriors, and that whole group was actually co-opted, I remember.
It was a hostile takeover.
BP operatives and everybody else. And then it was a huge effort to get everybody to the Real Coastal Warriors and make sure that whoever was moderating was not, you know, was people that we all knew personally, or, you know, we knew them from their advocacy and from their work. So if anybody wants to check that out, go to your Facebook and go to Real Coastal Warriors, one word, and you'll pull that up. In fact, there's over 21,000 people and news and updates and information about the Gulf and anything else that
oh,
might
the
have
environment
to do.
As a whole. If you have any issue,
environment.
You take it to them.
Yeah,
they will absolutely investigate it for you. They've become, like I said, they're champions now. And the thing with Facebook and other social media sites, Twitter, Reddit, Pinterest, these kind of things, they're growing. I watched Egypt use social media to topple a government.
It was
unbelievable. Now on Facebook, I don't know why, but for some reason or another, I have gained someone's attention somewhere. I have been banned from the BP America page, and I haven't been on the BP America page.
Oh, well, they know your name, apparently.
Yes, they do. And on any given day, if you went back and checked my Facebook page, I probably make over 100 posts a day between the Keystone Pipeline, appointments in our government that have to do with the EPA or the FDA. I'm also involved in some things with Monsanto and just genetically modified foods as it is. And so, you know, up until this week, I've been free to post, or actually last week, I've been free to post whatever I wanted to post, and I've never been harassed, and I've never gotten a warning. Facebook has left me alone. And as of this week, since we're coming down on this trial full scale, I've really been pushing. We have videos of dolphins that have died. We have news links to the endocrine disruption that's caused 300 aborted babies in 2011. 2011, there were over 300 aborted dolphins from the chemicals in the Gulf.
Right.
Suddenly today, well, actually the other night I was on Skype with some friends and they went to my page to reference something. Everything from February except the last 48 hours is gone. And that includes the huge protest this past weekend with over 50,000 people that marched on Washington for the Ducky Stone protest that you didn't hear a word about in mainstream media.
No, even Van Jones was there and Sharif Foytlin and all of our, you know, Gulf region heroes, most of them were there.
That was all over the country. That was everywhere from Canada. That wasn't just a Gulf Coast thing. That was all over the country. And
the activists came from Canada and from everywhere, but everybody descended on D.C. and it was, you know, for 50,000 people to show up in D.C. and then for Obama to not even be there because he was playing golf in Florida. You know,
yeah,
but that
and
happened.
And the golf trip made the headlines, and 50,000 people didn't. And I kept wondering to myself, if 50,000 people had shown up for an anti-gun rally or a pro-gun rally, it would have been on every front page and every leading story of every major media network in the world. And you heard nothing.
It's almost like you have to be 10 steps ahead of what, you know, the president is doing and actually be ready to jump on a plane or get in a car and go where he is, you know, but they keep his itinerary secret. So usually when I lived in D.C., I lived in D.C. for 8 years at the end of the 80s and the early 90s, and whenever there was a huge protest planned, the president was never around. He was always out of the area. Because that's just what they do. That's what they do. And I'm sure it has a lot to do with security, but it also has to do with the fact that they don't want to open the curtains of the White House and see all, you know, thousands of people outside the gates. So,
it didn't disappoint me as much. His golf, well, who he went golfing with disappointed me, considering that we had this protest that weekend. He could have gone anywhere besides where he went and who he went with. But what really disturbed me was the lack of media coverage. I found that almost unbelievable. But when you stop and think that isn't it something like 85% of the media is controlled by three networks now in this country?
Three corporations, yep. So the media is very, very controlled. And I'll tell you, the one young gal that left CNN, she's been a real champion of how the media is controlled and why she left CNN. Her name is Amber Lyon, L-Y-O-N, and I encourage everybody. She did some great exposés when she was working with CNN. And really super good reporter, but she called them on their BS, and she no longer works for them, and she's independent now. But really very, very brave woman. She uncovered a lot of the stuff going on behind Craigslist and the guy who put Craigslist together. By the way, I pulled up a map of where Bayou Corn is in the state of Louisiana, and it looks like they're about 50 miles north of the Gulf of Mexico from different angles, but they're north of Houma and they're north of Thibodaux. So the fact that all this land right around there in the Delta is not stable, and probably a lot of the land has water under it, makes me think that all of this is related, because if you've got pipelines and all of this going every which way and water rushing in and out underneath solid ground, and you've got groundwater underneath that, there's no telling what could happen. And
have you ever driven through that little community, those little communities like Houma and Thibodaux and those places?
I have never been to the south part of Louisiana. I have only driven through the northern part of the state on my way out west. I think I was on 20. I think at some point I went from 10 to 20. So
I have a friend who is a Houma Indian. That, you know, she's Native American. She's Houma, and she's of the Houma tribe. And we would go to Houma and travel through some of these smaller communities. And anybody that's been there knows that it reminded me of Venice traveling through there. There's little channels, and you go over these bridges on every other street, and there's waterways running up all through these communities. It's all connected to the Gulf. It's surreal almost, the little channels that just run in and out around these communities, and all this water runs right back to the Gulf at some point. And, you know, you have your fresh water, your brackish water, and your salt water, but at some point there is some way for this water to be working back from the Gulf, because I think that's what they determined, that it's Gulf water that's eroding this salt dome.
Right, right. And this is what we have here too. I mean that was one of the reasons why I moved in 2006, was to get away from the Gulf, because I knew if a hurricane came through there in Pinellas County, that with a 20-foot storm surge, Pinellas County would be almost completely inundated. There would be.
You're talking about Jacksonville now, aren't you?
No, I'm living north of Tampa and definitely up on very high ground. In fact, it's some of the highest ground.
Is Pinellas County, isn't that Jacksonville?
No, Pinellas County is just a little bit west of Tampa on the other side of the bay. It's a little peninsula that juts out, but it has the two biggest towns there, Clearwater and St. Pete. And then you have to cross the bridge to get to Tampa. But Pinellas, that was the other thing. While we were evacuating for a hurricane, I'm thinking there's a couple bridges coming over from the beaches that are one lane on each side, and then there's three main bridges going from Pinellas County over to Tampa, and I'm going, nobody would get the hell out in time. If there was a major hurricane, there's no way anybody would get out. Everybody would be bumper to bumper. And
absolutely.
I thought,
well, and Here in Alabama, our governor now has declared it 24 hours out. If there is a storm in the Gulf and it's 24 hours out, there is a mandatory evacuation from Mobile. And we have barrier islands. We have Dauphin Island. We have some cushion between us and a major hurricane. Although they have come up the mouth of the Mobile Bay, we have some cushion. We have a little, but that is one of the reasons here. The same thing scenario here. We have I-10 and we have I-65, and that's it. There's no real evacuation plan here either, and so they do it 24 hours out now.
Yeah, and I was told by somebody actually that the best way out would be just heading north up on 19 and then crossing over, heading towards the center of the state and then going up. But that would probably be the quickest way out if we ever had anything in this area. And now I feel confident that I'm far enough out where I could probably get out of the state of Florida if anything ever happened. But my biggest fear is just, having the visions that I had in the early part of this decade where, I saw a wall of water. And I worry about Bayou Corn and that whole thing blowing up out there and, if there was the San Madrid fault line and there was seismic activity, would that be enough to generate a tsunami right in the Gulf of Mexico? I mean, that's something to...
Well, one of the things we have to
wonder
too,
about.
Again, if anybody is familiar with Google Earth and they get on there and they can find the site of the Macondo, the Deepwater Horizon well, one of the things that we know for sure now that was never disclosed before is that we do have a crack in the seafloor. In 2011, I remember I was sitting at home, and we were bouncing back. We were desperate for news. We were trying to figure out what was going on, and there was an announcement that there had been an earthquake off of Dauphin Island on a thing called Wiggins Folly.
What was the date on that?
Oh, honey, I had to go back and look. I could actually pull it up real quick.
After the Gulf oil spill, though, right?
Right. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, this was when, this was in 2011, and it probably was that summer, but I don't have an exact, all I can remember is the shock, because we don't have earthquakes here, you don't hear about them, and especially this one was off Fort Morgan, which is a fort from the Civil War days that's on the Gulf, and it was a shock to find out that we had a 3.5 earthquake there. And when they said it was on Wiggins Folly, my curiosity clicked in, and I was like, what in the world is Wiggins Folly? Well, your fault lines, your major fault lines run north and south. Your minor fault lines and, like, little cracks that run off of the big fault lines are called follies. And the one that they're talking about is called Wiggins Folly. If you trace Wiggins Folly across, you have this huge crack now in the seafloor, and if you trace these follies, they run back and forth heading towards the Macondo site, heading towards the New Madrid, and they stop at an island called Horn Island. Horn Island is crucial in all of this. It's another one of those barrier islands, and after the spill, when they were spraying the dispersant correxit, they used this island as a storage facility for the correxit and now for some other really bad chemicals. And so this island still, if you go on Google Earth, you can see that it's completely oil-drenched. They've never cleaned it up. It's one of the major breeding grounds. It's not inhabited. This island's not inhabited. It's set aside, and it's supposed to be a breeding ground for most of the local fowl, really. But and also your sea turtle population. But now it's completely covered in oil, and BP uses it as a docking station for their tugboat that they use. And I don't know why they got one, and I don't know why they're running back and forth, but it's there. We've got pictures of it. We know it's there. But the fascinating thing, getting back to the fault lines, is that you've got the New Madrid, you've got this crack running from east to west off of the Macondo. All of it is such a frightening scenario to think about. It is so frightening. And again, I don't want to be a fear monger. I can't tell you for certain that anything is going to ever happen. All I know is that, you know, we're looking at a perfect storm here if it does. We've got this salt dome, and there's another one further upstate in Louisiana that's also I saw it today, that's starting to percolate and bubble just like Bayou Corn did. I don't know if there's any spot. Yeah, that just happened today. I haven't been able to look into that one too good because I keep getting banned.
Oh, my goodness. Well, what I did is I put up a map to look at everything, and it's like, you know, the Gulf of Mexico is peppered with rigs. There's rigs everywhere. Some of them are operational and some of them aren't. I've gotten two different numbers for the amount of rigs. I've gotten 37,000 or 40,000 or whatever. Now they're blowing some of the defunct ones, the ones that are not operational. They're blowing some of those up, and in so doing, they're actually decimating the snapper populations. That was some news that came out about 2 or 3 weeks ago. It's just been horrific in regards to destroying a food source, not just for humans, but you know, for other sea creatures. The fact that they're blowing these wells up, and the wells themselves, the ones that are abandoned, have become almost like massive coral reefs. So there's
right.
You know,
it's the platforms. It's the platforms, and that was one of the selling points. That was one of the. I don't know if you remember, but when all this first started, and there was a lot of concern, and of course nobody wants this in their backyard. One of the big selling points was that these would become reefs. These would become artificial reefs, and they would draw the sea life, and they would actually improve things over time, even when they were no longer being used. Now, for some reason, all of a sudden, they're deciding that they don't want those out there. And I know that off the coast of California, when they went to investigating some of the abandoned reefs, one of the things they're supposed to do when they abandon a reef is they're supposed to make sure it's capped off and sealed right, and they're supposed to check on it from time to time and make sure it's not leaking. I really don't believe with the history and the track record that we have for safety violations and the impunity, you know, that they've worked with, that they've done the checks. And I do believe that we have But 37,000 wells. You can't possibly believe that they're not leaking. At least some of them.
I'm going to tell a little story because I know that deep water drilling does cause seismic activity, and I don't know how I put that two and two together. It just kind of happened, but. On September 10th, I had just moved from one location in a town that was pretty far inland from Clearwater in Tampa, and we had moved from a house into a mobile home. So here we are on September 10th. It was September 10th, a Sunday morning, 2006, and felt a great shaking, and I looked at my partner, Leon, and I said, you know, I wonder if a big truck drove by or something, because that was huge. And he said, well, I don't know. He goes, it's Sunday morning. And I happened to go online, didn't hear anything on the news, watched my news programs for Sunday morning. And about 2 o'clock, I got on the computer and was talking to somebody who lived up in Pennsylvania. And he said, did you feel the shaking down your way? And I said, what are you talking about? He said, the shaking that took place this morning. And I said, fill me in. And he said, there was an earthquake that was supposed to be 200 miles off the coast of Florida. And he said, you didn't feel it? I said, no, they didn't even have it on the news. He goes, what was in the news up here in Pennsylvania? I thought that was very strange. So right away, I had been reading some things about deep water drilling, and I thought, I need to look something up. And I went and looked up news, deep water drilling in the Gulf of Mexico, or some kind of search parameter like that I put under news in Google or Yahoo or whatever search engine I was using. And it pulled up several articles that the oil companies were testing deep water drilling and that they had been given the okay. And the date on the articles was September 5th, 2006, 5 days before. And I thought, this was an earthquake that was caused by that, because there, just like you said, there's never earthquakes here. We don't have earthquakes here. You know, we might have a couple sonic booms that happen out of MacDill Air Force Base, but we don't have earthquakes. So it was all extremely very strange, and nobody, of course, the press never reported it, never even reported on the earthquake. Even though it did, I checked USGS, the website, and was able to find it. It was there.
Mm-hmm. RSOE is another great website to go to when you can't, because they're out of Austria. And so what we, and I hate to say it, but I've seen it for myself, and I have the luxury of having friends who are international. There are headlines that they get that we don't get here in the United States. We don't find out about things in the United States like they do. And there is information that is actually blocked. And again, that sounds like conspiracy theorists, but they contact me. They let me know. And at first it scared me really bad that, you know, oh, my God, our government would actually do this. I've always been such a patriot. And even if I didn't believe in the administration, I believed in America, and I never thought that these things could happen here. And I promise you, they're happening. We are not hearing everything we're supposed to be hearing. We're not even allowed to hear everything we're supposed to hear.
Now, I'm going to tell everybody, I'm going back to this particular post for this mic check on wisewomenmedia.posteris.com. And I'm posting these links that we've been referring to. I'm going to tell you the links that I have under the blog post for the mic check. I've got The Real Coastal Warriors on Facebook. I have Bayou Corn Sinkhole from Facebook. And this website that Teresa's just referenced, which is it's a weird URL because it's from overseas, but it's HISC.RSOE.HU. Actually, I think this might be out of Hungary because of the H-U.
Yeah, that's where it's at. It is. It's Hungary.
But anyway, I posted that there, and as soon as I was posting it just now, I had a CAPTCHA to fill out on my own website, on my own blog. So it's like, no, we don't want you to post this here, you know? It's kind of like that.
Anita, it's been happening to me all day, and it never happens. I mean, I I'm insignificant. I'm a very small fish in a big food chain. Why? Why me all of a sudden four times in one day? There's information that they just absolutely don't, and people think I'm a conspiracy theorist. I'm not. They don't want it out there. All of a sudden you're getting have you had a CAPTCHA today?
Yeah. I get them
you
all
have?
The time. And
I
right
never
now
get them.
We have earthquakes as of today. There was a 1.7 in Yucaipa, California, and the other one was a 4.3 in Rosarita in Baja, California. So these are things we're not even hearing about on the news. I mean, they probably wouldn't report on the 1.7, but they certainly would report on the 4.3. but they haven't done that, and they're not going to. Pardon me. But in any case, this map is very, I mean, it's full of information. It tells you if there's been a biological hazard. It tells you. It even tells you if there's huge vehicle accidents, flash floods, and this is a global map, so you can
right. It's an amazing site. I will tell you, though, if you're using a browser like anything, Windows, I don't know if it'll do it on Mac, it refreshes every 5 minutes, I think, that site does, and it will hang your browser up if you don't refresh the page along with it. You can't just leave that tab open and go on and do something else. It'll cause your window to your browser to shut down because of the way it considers it a script, and it will cause you to shut down. So just a heads up for you, because there were several that we were looking at. It was a really strange thing, right after the spill, or not right after, but a year after, when we were doing so much investigations, we were also watching, we were worried about earthquakes, we were worried about magnetic pull, because obviously I'm very scientific-minded, but the core of our planet is made up of iron, and when there is a major solar flare, it has a tremendous pull on the center of our planet. And we have an electromagnetic flare that flares out at us from the sun. And it's known to cause minor disruptions like radio blackouts, power blackouts, auroras in the atmosphere, especially on the North Pole and into the northern reaches. But it also, if there's a coronal pole, it can cause a really strong pull, and you can get minor earthquakes from it. And so we were watching this in addition to everything else. And what we noticed, there were several during that 2010 and that summer, there was one in particular that was a K4 index flare. And during these times of these major flares, we were watching birds drop out of the sky. Do you remember that?
I remember that.
And
that happened several times, actually, not just one.
Oh, many.
Yeah,
many
it happened
times.
Quite a lot, so...
And
well, quite a lot there during the, you know, right around the Madrid, you know, the New Madrid fault. And then, of course, it was happening in other locales also in Europe, too. So,
it was a weird thing. And so what they began to suspect was that this, you know, however birds migrate may have something to do with electromagnetic frequency, and that these solar flares were interrupting their flight patterns, and they were basically falling out of the sky. It was one of those anomalies that comes along with, oh gosh, this is interesting. Look what's happening on this side, I guess.
Right.
It doesn't have anything to do with it, but it does, you know, it does explain some phenomenon. It takes that conspiracy theory off of it when you can say, okay, well, this is why. You know, it doesn't have anything to do with some of these crazy things people do talk about. it explains a lot of things. But then on the other hand, on that site, you see things that we never hear about here. We never hear about them. Why? Why isn't this information released to the public? Or we get the information, but it's blacked out here, and we don't get it till a week later.
Right, right. It's like keep us in the dark. Keep us like mushrooms in the dark. I think we're in for some really rough times. I like to think that we'd be leaving a planet that would, you know, be similar to the sayings that the Native Americans, the indigenous, say, you know, that what you do on this planet now has an effect for seven generations beyond. And I just don't know what to say. As I hear these things daily, you know, I'm appalled that our government and that people themselves, our own citizens, could be so apathetic to what's happening. That to me boggles the mind, that people are not rising up in the street, you know?
They don't want to know. That is the conclusion I've come to. There are so many people, even here locally, even in my family, that don't want to know. They absolutely don't want to know, Anita. It's too frightening to think about. I was looking for something that, you know, in this vein, if you accept the theory, and it's not a theory, it's a fact. I've read a huge thing and watched it on public television, how, you know, there has been a movement to squash climate change. They don't want to believe in it. They don't want to know. But if you do believe in climate change, then this is what you basically believe. You have to believe what scientists tell us about it, and we have to believe that the United Nations tells us that there will be it will be 5 degrees hotter than the pre-industrial levels by 2050. 5 degrees. And that temperature increase is more than enough for the oceans to swallow our cities, stop all food from growing, and doom to extinction every species short of the cockroach. So what we're looking at, if you believe in climate change, is that for all intents and purposes, climate change is like a giant meteor that lands in 2050, and it's the end of human civilization if we don't stop.
There's an interview that I did with Lierre Keith from Deep Green Resistance that's back on the blog. I can't remember. It was probably more than, several months ago, maybe 4 or 5 months ago. She has worked with Deep Green Resistance and was one of the co-writers of the book Deep Green Resistance, by Derek Jensen and Eric McBay and Lierre Keith. Those were the three writers. But she has a video that just blew me away when she went to Occupy, and it was not last November, but the November before, and she went to the Oakland Occupy, which was pretty much the center of it all on the West Coast. And she talked about climate change and the environment. And she had a megaphone. It's easy to find the video. In fact, I'll try to post it at the bottom of the blog post so people can take a look. But some of the facts she had on climate change and what's going to happen just boggled the mind and were really extremely frightening. But she was really just trying to make very solid scientific points to rattle people's cages to make them realize what's coming. And of course, that's part of the reason why Occupy formed. Occupy formed out of economic disparity and things that were happening in our environment. It was a combination of things. Economic disparity was probably the first thing. But now we have another thing that has really been equated to NAFTA on steroids. And we want to talk about spending money in the environment and everything. This is called Stop the TPP, or the TPP. I'm trying to get the, hang on, I'm going to get the website. All right, it's stoptpp.org. This is called the Trans-Pacific Partnership. It's like NAFTA on steroids. And if you go to the website, you'll see the beginnings of a movement for this website. And it says, "We are waking up. The fog is lifting. We are sweeping away the lies and secrecy. The corporate and political leaders of the Pacific Rim nations are meeting in cities across America, such as Chicago, Dallas, San Diego, and Leesburg, to turn the Pacific Ocean and its peoples into a giant privatized corporate lake characterized by non-union workers, Walmart supply chain feeders, poisoned, landless agricultural laborers, a dying biodiversity, and rising, drowning sea levels. We cannot and will not let this happen." You can look at that website, try to find events and things that are happening near you. If there isn't anything happening near you, make it happen. Because these connections, this particular TPP, will stop any chance of us food and water sovereignty and work and fair labor laws, and so many other things are wrapped up into this. But
I mean,
when I heard,
if you don't mind, are you putting these links on your page?
Yes,
or
right
on,
underneath the blog post on wisewomenmedia.posteris.com. It says Wise Women Media, for 2/22/13 open mic. And underneath, I've put all these links. And I've put the stoptpp.org. And people need to look at this, because when I heard the speaker the other night, he was equating this to treason. Whoever put this together...
Your links aren't showing up. I'm on
your page. Because I just refreshed...
I'm on your page. Well, I mean, none of them are. Nothing that you told me about. I came to your page. You had a link on my page.
Okay.
That showed up. And
see,
so
where it says
I came
Wise
to your
Women
page.
Media for 223.13 open mic. Click
I
on
see,
that.
I actually
so you get,
see three of them. And
it
you
says
want me to come to
women,
the Wise
no,
Women?
Go to the actual wisewomenmedia.posteris.com. And then click
okay.
on Wise Women Media for 222.13 open mic, so you get
okay.
only that blog post, and then you'll see the links underneath, right
okay,
underneath
I'm
the
on,
blog
I've
post.
Got both on. I've got your page on Facebook up, and I also have Wise Women Media on, and I'm not seeing the links.
That's weird. All right.
It is. Yeah, on Facebook, there's actually on your page, I see 1, 2, 3, 4 links to your blog to Wise Women Media, and the last one up above it was the I Trust Random Friends post.
Uh huh. No, go.
And,
don't do anything on Facebook. Go right to the blog post.
Right. I'm here, and I don't see anything.
And then it should say up above, wisewomenmedia.posteris.com/wise-woman-media-4-22213-open-mic. Is that what you got in your browser?
No, I've got
okay,
Wise Women.
You're on the page, the blog. Click on the title of that post right above where the mic is, the picture of
the
mic.
Go to the blog is? Go to the blog?
Yeah. We click on Wise Women Media for 222.13 open mic, that title. Click on that. And then you'll only have that blog post, and if you scroll down, you'll see all the links underneath it. They'll show up.
I'm not logged in, so maybe that's why.
Okay, well, let me go ahead and send you the links. But I've got, well, what I've got on there is Real Coastal Warriors, Bayou Corn Sinkhole, both of those on Facebook. Then I have the RSOE, which is the global map for things that are happening, you know, all over the world.
Well, where did you get the CAPTCHA from?
Oh, Posteris gave me the CAPTCHA when I was trying to post these. They were giving
okay.
me a...
Okay, here they are. They just showed up. They just showed up. Okay.
Okay, good.
All right.
And then
there.
Underneath
they're
that
there.
Is the stoptpp.org. And I don't think a lot of people
right.
know about this organization yet, but this is...
I wanted to look at it. That's why I was wanting to know about the links. I don't, you know, and then when I don't see what I think I'm supposed to see...
Yeah, because the TPP is going to take away... all of our rights. I mean, NAFTA was nothing compared to this. And the TPP is definitely going to be a corporate tool used, you know, used by the powers that be, basically. The facts. What is TPP? The Trans-Pacific Partnership would create a super treaty which would jeopardize the sovereignty of the nations involved by giving that power to large corporations like Walmart, Monsanto, Goldman Sachs, Pfizer, Halliburton, Philip Morris, GE, GM, Apple. There are currently 11 nations involved: the U.S., New Zealand, Australia, Brunei, Chile, Malaysia, Peru, Singapore, Vietnam, and Mexico, and Canada. Japan has also shown interest. The economic power of this group is more than 40% larger than the 27-nation European Union. TPP will offshore millions of good-paying jobs to low-wage nations, undercutting working conditions globally and increasing unemployment. TPP will expand pharmaceutical monopoly protections and institute longer patents that will decrease access to affordable medications. TPP will limit food GMO labeling and allow the import of goods that do not meet U.S. safe standards. And there's more and more on that page. So when you go to that page, just go to the facts, and it says, what is TPP? And you can read more about it. And then it also has something more on food sovereignty, which, of course, we know NAFTA screwed that up. But if TPP screws it up even more, we're really, really screwed. It's really going to be crunch time to getting a garden in as quickly as possible, because we don't know if we're going to be able to afford the food that they're going to be sending to our stores, or whether it's even going to
Another, when you talk about getting a garden in, another thing that I've been following, Monsanto has recently sued a small local farmer. He's 75 years old. He had gone to a silo, and he had gotten seeds that were they were leftovers, basically. They were being ground up for, got in my memory so bad. But anyway, if we try to use non-patented seeds or use seeds that are not, they're not going to let us.
Unless we're saving
everything.
Our own. That's,
yeah.
That's what has to be done. We have to save our own. If we save our own, we're pretty much screwed, you know?
It's just unbelievable that that it's gotten this far. And I can't encourage people enough. Don't take my word for it. Don't take Anita's word for it. Do your own research and please get involved before we can't get involved.
Yeah, because this is a situation, like David Cobb says in his talks, you know, we're running around talking about how things are in a crisis, because we are in a crisis. Everything about what's going on puts us in crisis mode right now. And Americans, like we've talked about, I think Sandy did wake a lot of people up. I really do. I think Sandy awakened a lot of people up to the fact that, you know, climate change is real and it's here and it's now. It's happening now. One of the good things that came out of Sandy was people now realize that the government isn't there to help you. They're not there to help you in a crisis. The Occupy people formed Occupy Sandy, and the local churches opened their doors and became distribution centers, and basically the people that were getting help from Occupy Sandy, whereas FEMA and all those other groups weren't around or couldn't be accessed. And even the dirtiest thing that they did to these people was when they asked for aid from the government, the few that did, FEMA and all these other places, they had these people fill out a friggin' loan form for their money.
Mm-hmm.
A loan form. In other words, they got to pay it back with interest. And I thought, you know, let's just add some more insult to the injury these people have already experienced. I thought that was just horrible. And I got that that were there, that were filling the form out. I know.
One of the activists that I work with, that, you know, they became involved with the Gulf Coast and then helped us so much through our troubles with Ivan and the spill and, you know, different things, helping out for Christmas for these fishermen that didn't have jobs. Well, then they got hit by Sandy, and, of course, we've tried to help them. And through that, I've watched the Occupy Sandy movement. It is heartbreaking what those people are going through. Absolutely heartbreaking. And, you know, one of the wake-up calls, one of the huge wake-up calls should have been when Mitt Romney was trying to call for the abolishment of FEMA.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm sure, you know, if it had been their backyard, and it was in this case, that suddenly people started saying, wait a minute, maybe we do need FEMA after all. Because for so long they felt like they were pouring money into the Gulf Coast. you know, they're not there to help us. They don't want to help us. They don't even want, you know, one of the most insulting things that I think I heard, and I'm all to tell you now, I'm not a Republican. I'm not a Democrat. I'm not anything. I think pretty much that the political system is corrupt here in America, and we've got to change it. We've got to get on this move to amend. We just have to. But one of the things that I found so insulting was my mother was on Social Security. She worked all her life, and she finally got to retirement age, and she collected her Social Security. And when I heard somebody say that she considered herself a victim and that she was on an entitlement program,
oh God!
I think that was our Republican hopeful.
Mm-hmm.
The 47%, you know, he said anybody on these programs were victims and that they were on entitlement programs and they felt entitled. Well, you know, they did. They paid into it all their life.
Yeah, that's entitlement. You're entitled to something after you're paying into it. Of course.
Yeah. You know, our government's not there
and
to help
earning
us.
Something. Since when did that become a bad thing, you know?
Well, and they're not there to help us. They've given all the tax breaks to the wealthiest, you know, companies, corporations, not even, you know, even if the wealthiest 1% of the people paid their taxes, it really wouldn't make any difference. It's just not that big of a drop in the bucket. If we got the corporations to pay their taxes, on the other hand, it would wipe out our national debt. Wipe it out. Everything,
and
including
the other thing that's mentioned in Deep Green Resistance is these big corporations are the massive polluters. They cause 90% of the pollution that exists today. And there's
Absolutely.
Got to be ways that they can conduct business without causing 90% of the pollution. And the other thing is a lot of these things that are in manufactured mode, do we really need them? That's the question we have to ask. All these plastic things, all this processed food, all this, I mean, I'm cleaning out a garage right now to sell on the street corner, you know, up at our little flea market booth. Useless shit that I've had in boxes for years. I don't even need it. I don't know why I have it. Know what I was thinking when I got it, you know?
Well, because we are in a consumer-driven society. When you walk into any store, you are, the marketing is for impulse buying. It is
right.
Set there to entice you to buy, and we have all fallen victim to it, every one of us. And there's some of it you almost can't avoid anymore. Nothing comes in recyclables. Nothing.
Right. Right.
You know, it's in Mobile. Now, I will say that my in-laws own a condo down in Florida, and when we would go down there, I noticed that in Port Orange, everybody has like three different garbage cans, and you have your plastics, and you have your cardboards, and you have your glass, and, you know, or your aluminum, or, you know. Here in Mobile, we don't encourage that. There isn't a big push on for that.
Yeah, we don't have recyclable garbage here where I am, you know, but we do have the dump, which is, you know, just a couple of miles away. So if we do have something that we can take there, you know, it's easy to do that. We're not, it's not like on the other side of the county. So that works for us. You know, I would rather take stuff there anyway rather than have a bill where somebody's picking it up. So I've done both, but I prefer the easy way of doing it, which is, to me, taking it and lowering my carbon footprint, because anything that's organic goes in the compost pile. I don't throw that away.
Well, there's so many people in urban situations that don't have that luxury, you know. In our little concrete jungles, there are no compost And a lot of people rely on public transportation. There is no dump close by. Mobile is a hub city in that it sits on the Gulf, or it sits on Mobile Bay, and half of it, you know, it's like a big wheel cut in half. Everything kind of comes in here from all different directions, and the people in the city that the city on the bay really don't have those luxuries that a lot of people that live in the suburbs or in the rural areas surrounding the city do, because that's where all your dumps and you know, your access to things of that nature are at. Is
right.
Outward.
Yeah,
so, you know, we just really have to, you talk about plastics. We have Mardi Gras here. We're the home of Mardi Gras. A lot of people don't know that. They think it's New Orleans, but Mobile is. And because we are, everything sits right on the Water Street is literally named that because it sits on the water. And all the parades go down that route, and everybody's out there, and they're throwing plastic Mardi Gras beads, and they've got their plastic cups and their cups from their drinking and the Frisbees and the wrappers. And after Mardi Gras is over, one of the ways they used to street clean was to just, you know, they had things that would wash the street. They would literally just sweep all this stuff into the storm drains. And, of course, the storm drains emptied into Mobile Bay. And it was just becoming a huge factor for pollution here. And now they have, like at Mardi Gras time, they have these giant 55-gallon drums painted up Mardi Gras colors, and they encourage you after the parades are over, if you're going to throw your Mardi Gras beads away or whatever, dump them in these 55-gallon drums, and they'll recycle them. But the point is that, I mean, just watching that alone and watching the amount of things that get swept out into the bay and end up wrapped around turtles and dolphins and fish and all these little sea creatures, and they eat them, and they kill them. We got to do something.
Yeah.
At this point, people just got to wake up, and it's become, it's so, you talk about these visions that you have, it's there. You can see it when you really wake up. When you really start paying attention and looking around, the veil just kind of gets ripped away.
Yeah, it's really, like David Cobb says, we really are in a crisis. It is definitely time for people to step up to the plate and realize that the change isn't going to come from the top down. The change has to come from us going upward and bringing a whole bunch of people with us, no matter what degree of what we're changing. We have to bring people with us. I mean, we have to do by example, too. You know, we have to show by example this can be done. You know, if you're saying you can't put a garden in your yard, oh, yes, you can. If your dirt is no good, well, then you put your stuff in pots. You know, there's always a step above, a cut above of something that you can do. If you think you can't, you know, find creative ways to do it. And it'll work. It'll work. I believe that. And I really do believe that we are on a dying planet. And it's up to, I don't know if we've gone too far. I really wish, I'm going to post that video to my personal Facebook page of Lierre Keith with Occupy Oakland, yeah, in November of 2011. And really, she threw the fear of God in me. And then later on, I had her, interviewed her here on the show, and she was a great interview and very gracious. And she gave me a lot of other interview ideas, which actually I need to follow up on for future shows. But great writer and presents her stuff well. And you can find a lot of the teach-ins she's done right on YouTube as well. But very frightening about the environment. She had some very frightening things to say to rattle people, to really scare people. And people need to be scared because we need to fix this. We need to fix it now. We can't wait.
We can't. Well, like that, like I was just reading to you, by 2050, you know, when I was reading an article, and if you will, I'll share one of the things that they had to say, that I sat there, you know, shaking my head, just, you know, oh, my God, this is what I believe, and yes, it's true. We're in deep trouble. We are in super deep trouble. If I can find this, I will. Three things they pointed out. It said, you're among the last people that will ever walk this planet. When you think about it, 2050, that's only 37 years away. We are some of the last. If they are right and we are wrong, and everybody, or we're not wrong, or we just won't look, we won't pay attention. Your children won't survive to be middle-aged.
No, no. My friend Crow is on instant message, and she just said to me, we're on a planet that's, instead of being on a planet that's a dying planet, we're on a planet that's being killed. It is being killed. And I like the way Dr. Helen Caldicott actually states that, too. She's another life-changing speaker. If you ever have a chance to hear her speak, you must see her. And I'm saying that to you, Teresa, and to anybody who's listening. Dr. Helen Caldicott will change your life when you hear her speak. She says that the planet Earth is in the ICU, and of course she's speaking as a doctor. So she says planet Earth is in the ICU. So
one of the things that I found, you know, remarkable, and it's true, planet Earth is going to be just fine. It has survived forever. I read a quote from Jurassic Park, and I became enamored with it because it was so spot on. Planet Earth is going to become, it's going to be just fine. We, you know, there'll be changes. If we screw it up, there'll be changes, but it's survived. It survived a whole lot worse than us. It survived the Ice Age. It survived meteors hitting us. You know, rather lengthy, but for what it's worth, Charlton Heston actually read this, and I thought it was awesome. He said, you think man can destroy the planet? What intoxicating vanity. Let me tell you about our planet. Earth is 4.5 billion years old. There's been life on it for nearly that long, 3.8 billion years. Bacteria first, and later the first multicellular life, then the first complex creatures in the sea, on the land, then finally the great sweeping ages of animals, the amphibians, the dinosaurs, and at last the mammals, each one enduring millions on millions of years, great dynasties of creatures rising, flourishing, dying away. All of this against the background of continuous and violent upheaval, mountain ranges thrust up and eroded away, cometary impacts, volcanic eruptions, oceans rising and falling, whole continents moving, an endless, constant, violent change, colliding, buckling, making to make mountains over millions of years. Earth has survived everything in its time. It will certainly survive us. If all the nuclear weapons in the world went off at once, and all the plants, all the animals died, and the Earth was sizzling hot for 100,000 years, life would survive somewhere. Under the soil, frozen in the Arctic ice. Sooner or later, when the planet was no longer inhospitable, life would spread again. The evolutionary process would begin again. It might take a few billion years for life to regain its present variety. Of course, it would be very different from what it is now, but the Earth would survive. It would survive our folly, only we would not. If the ozone layer gets thinner, ultraviolet radiation sears the Earth, so what? Ultraviolet radiation is good for life. It is powerful energy. It promotes mutation and change. Many forms of life will thrive with more UV radiation. Many others will die out. Do you think this is the first time that it's happened? Think about oxygen. Necessary for life now, but oxygen is actually a metabolic poison, a corrosive glass like fluorine. When oxygen was first produced as a waste product by certain plant cells some 3 billion years ago, it created a crisis for all other life on Earth. Those plants were polluting the environment, exhaling a lethal gas. The Earth will eventually Earth eventually had an atmosphere incompatible with life. Nevertheless, life on Earth took care of itself. In thinking of the human being, 100 years is a long time. 100 years ago, we didn't have cars, airplanes, computers, or vaccines. It was a whole different world. But to the Earth, 100 years is nothing. 1 million years is nothing. This planet lives and breathes on a much vaster scale. We can't imagine its slow and powerful rhythms, and we haven't got the humility to try. We've been residents here for the blink of an eye. If we're gone tomorrow, the Earth will not miss us.
That's interesting. That sure, you know, I believe that life will take on different forms, just as that has stated to us, just as that piece of reading stated, that life will take on different forms, things will die out, things will become extinct. But I really, really do believe that right now we are at extinction levels. So it is definitely not time for apathy.
For our sake, we need to be paying. And, you know, when I think about it, Anita, I'm not a chicken anymore. I'm not a young spring chicken. But I look at my grandchildren, and I look at my grandnieces and nephews. They don't deserve this.
No.
They don't deserve this. We are handing them the worst possible scenario economically, socially, spiritually. Every aspect, it seems like, we are handing them a broken future. And we've got to stop and think about that. They matter. They matter more than we do. And let's hope they do a better job than we have.
Yeah. It's time. It's way past time, you know. Unless you have anything to add, I think we've come to the end, unless you have any closing, parting comments, things that are happening, events. You might want to fill us in a little bit about the actual court case and what's happening this coming week.
There was one thing that I did want to share with everybody, if they've got a moment or two just to listen, is that we are coming up, and now I believe it's too late. The petitions have all been filled. They're closed now. And I think it's too late to call the White House. We were encouraging everybody to call the White House. The trial is Monday. We'll know whether or not we get what we asked for. Either way, it's a big gamble. We're betting that we can prove that they were grossly negligent, which there's a huge legal backup for that, but we've got to be able to prove that, and we think that we can. They don't think that we can. Please, everybody, you know, hold us. You know, intentions go up for the Gulf, for the people here, for the fishermen who can't feed their families, for those that are sick, and also, you know, move to amend. Please, everybody, get involved. Get involved on the local level. Sign your petitions. Put them out there. An email is such an easy thing to do. A phone call. It takes 5 minutes. Anytime you can sit down and make a handwritten letter, huge impact over an email or a petition online. You know, get involved with your future and with your children's future. And thank you so much, Anita, for your time tonight. I appreciate you.
Well, thank you so much for coming on at the last minute. And I think we have a great show that we can actually pass around because we've definitely covered a lot of the environmental things that are going on in the Gulf region, and we need to make people aware of TPP and what's happening with Bayou corn. These are unreported stories that people really need to know about. So I just want to say good night to everybody. Thank you, Teresa, again, and good night to everybody, and thanks for listening, and we'll see you at this same time next week, Friday night, for another segment of our show. And I'm going to play a parting song, which I think really, this song just touches my soul, and I definitely want to share it, especially with you, Teresa. It's called, it's by Grace Potter and the Nocturnals, and it's called Colors. So good night, everybody, and have a listen, and hope you enjoyed the show. Good night.
right here in my head.
I know.